This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wouldn't you like to take a vacation from your bills? Well, you can. With credit card balances at an all-time high and Golden Oak's 5.25% rate, you could be saving thousands of dollars after a simple phone call. Call today and get your cash in as little as 14 days and make no payments for 2 months. Visit GoldenOakLending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
6.19 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
One of the funniest days on this show. So funny. Bam. Good to be with you on this Wednesday afternoon. I've literally gone through the entire day thinking it was Thursday.
Really?
Yes.
Although ready for the week to be over, huh?
I did get my first long walk of the season in this morning, and it was good for the soul.
Feels good.
Oh, man.
I did that last Saturday. It was long overdue.
Oh, man. Nice. Long walk through the woods by Mill Creek. Lovely.
Lovely.
Matthew Perry was given a total of 27 ketamine shots in his three final days on this planet.
Yeah, this is a bad report.
Before his tragic death at the age of 54 in October of 2023, according to a new documentary.
Isn't that a veterinarian drug?
Ketamine?
Ketamine, yes, is used in the veterinary world, but it's also used in very small doses, effectively micro-dosing the substance as a treatment for extreme depression and other mental health concerns, typically done in a controlled environment, per se, a doctor's office.
Yes.
I love how later on in the story from the New York Post, they refer to him as the whole nine yards actor. Nobody remembers him from Whole Nine Yards, but they certainly do from Friends.
Whole Nine Yards was a pretty good movie.
It was his only successful movie.
Mm-hmm.
The beloved Friends actor's final moments were laid bare in a new Peacock documentary titled Matthew Perry, A Hollywood Tragedy. I might watch that tonight if it's out.
Yeah. I need something lighter right now. I'm going to be honest.
What's going on?
I just, you know, we were going to watch the Black Hawk Down docuseries that I know it's brilliant and outstanding, but you kind of have to be in a certain headspace to watch something that historically heavy. Mm-hmm. I just there are nights where I go home and I'm like, you want to watch like Nemo or The Incredibles? Like,
do you have Peacock?
Yeah,
go watch The Office Superfan episodes. You know, that show is so dumb. I mean, it is the pinnacle of dumb humor.
Dumber than Dana and Parks?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And way smarter.
Really?
Yes.
I wouldn't say that dumb.
Dan, I have taken that back up. You know, I've seen it like 13 times all the way through or something ridiculous. But I use it as my background show. So whenever, you know, I've already watched Severance because it only comes out on Fridays. I've already watched the new 1923. It only comes out on Mondays. In the interim, we watch The Office Superfan episodes with the extended cuts. I have been belly laughing for an hour and a half each night.
The new Full Swing dropped last night. We didn't get that in last night. We might start that tonight. And even if you are just a marginal golf fan, the cameras were rolling for the Scheffler arrest. They ask Rory McIlroy about his very high profile relationship stuff. Well, no, he filed and then I believe he
defiled.
But
didn't he file again?
I believe he has not since refiled.
Not sure about that. But the Scheffler stuff, you know, you remember what a huge story that was when he was arrested just trying to get into the tournament. They were all there shooting that show when that whole thing went down. And so that'll be something a little – I just need a palate cleanser from war.
It was funny. They interviewed – I saw some clips of it on Twitter. They interviewed a bunch of other golfers about it, and they were like, we didn't know what was going on. We're just warming up.
Run, Do Not Walk to Reacher Season 3.
I started that last night.
So did we.
Really?
Yeah. So did we.
I watched all of them.
Do you have to watch 1 and 2?
So you don't have to, no. I had already seen 1 and 2. T had not. She hadn't even seen the movie Jack Reacher. So we watched, we binged over the weekend seasons 1 and 2, which I didn't mind watching again anyway because they're so good.
And it's easy watching.
Yeah.
It's not the most complicated of shows.
Now, I will say, the only thing I'll say about the Reacher series is the action is excellent, the plot is excellent, the writing leaves a little to be desired.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay, though.
Yeah.
But grab some popcorn, watch the show.
If you're looking for just mindless, sometimes violent, sometimes not, but with a great plot, check out Reacher.
The good guy is going to punch the bad guy hard.
Okay.
And he's going to walk away into the sunset.
Always does. Like, there's this one scene, I think it was in season two, where he goes up to an ATM and there's a woman who's on a street level ATM.
Yeah.
And she's making a withdrawal and you can tell that there's something not right.
Yeah, she's nervous and
jittery. And she goes, I just need to make one more withdrawal. And Reacher, who's a big guy, right?
Big
not
dude.
Not Tom Cruise from the movie, but he's let's just say he doesn't miss leg and arm day. And he looks over to his left and there's a minivan at the corner. And he goes, don't turn around. Just listen to me. Keep withdrawing money. Is that your minivan on the corner? And she goes, yes. And my baby's in the back seat. And he goes, is there a gun? And she goes, yes. And he goes, right hand? And she goes, yes. And he just goes, I'll be right back. This will just take a moment.
I know. And it's like, don't get him.
He beats the crap out of that guy. Slams his head in the door.
There is a visceral reaction. It's like, yeah. It's fun.
I'll be right back. This will just take a moment.
I don't have to watch that episode.
No, it's only one scene.
That's pretty funny.
But yeah, it's good.
Was there another aborted landing today?
No, nope, it wasn't today, Dan. It was yesterday.
I skipped over this story today because I was so sure it was the landing. Oops, nope. Let's get back up in the air story from yesterday. This is another one.
Okay, so the we're going to land. Oh, crap, there's a private jet. Let's get back up in the air. That was at Midway Airport in Chicago.
Yep, Southwest flight.
Full disclosure, I have started hunting these stories
down.
This is an American Airlines flight out of Washington, D.C.'s Ronald Reagan National.
God.
Yes, the same site where 67 people were killed last month. An American Airlines flight was forced to abort its landing at D.C.'s Reagan National Airport to avoid a plane taking off on the same runway that it was landing on. Less than 1 month after a mid-air collision killed 67 people at the same airport. The incident unfolded as the Airbus A319, which was en route from Boston, was preparing to touch down at about 8:30 in the morning yesterday, according to the FAA.
How many feet is this to the ground? When I say preparing to touch down,
I would guess that is roughly 30 feet, 25 to 30 feet.
Maybe a two-story building, like two-story house close to the ground.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe even less than a two-story house. An air traffic controller instructed American Flight 2246 to perform a go-around at Reagan National Airport to ensure that separation was maintained between this aircraft and a preceding departure from the same runway. The airline described the incident as a standard go around. There's no such thing.
They're trying to call this a, quote, canceled approach. This plane was almost on the ground.
It does not say how many people were on board the flight, either one, the one taking off or the one trying to land on the exact same runway.
I know that pilots practice for this all the time, but passengers do not. Maybe we should start practicing this so we know what it feels like when I'm about to have, what do they call it, a near miss?
Near collision now.
I still am like, what are those passengers thinking? When you see the ground below you, yep, coming closer, here we go. Just kind of a little brace. We're going to touch down here any moment. And then you just go, whoa, I'm flying backward because the plane is back up in the air again. I mean, thank God the pilots know how to do that.
If you ever needed proof that Reagan National Airport has way too much air traffic around it.
What's that?
Look what has happened in the last 2 months. I'm telling you, and I said it last month, they need to build a third airport in Washington, D.C. because you have Dulles, which I believe is in Maryland, if I'm not mistaken. Then you have Reagan National, which is in D.C., if I'm not mistaken. Dan, can you check me on that? I believe Dulles is in Maryland.
It's to the west of D.C., out in the countryside.
And Reagan is in D.C. They need to build a third airport and make landing at Reagan only for dignitaries and government officials.
Dulles is in Virginia.
Virginia, I beg your pardon. Thank you, Dan.
It's all close, though.
But they need to build a third airport.
Well, then how do you stop people from flying into Reagan?
You limit it to people who are dignitaries and government workers.
So it's just not very busy ever? I mean, I know there are a lot of dignitaries and a lot of government workers. They're not all flying in and out every 20 minutes.
No, but congressmen fly, and women fly out every Friday. They fly in every Monday.
This is the Capitol airport. The peasants use the one out there. But
they could restrict the number of flights arriving and departing.
They
could just cap the number.
Because the way I understand it, Reagan National Airport currently takes in and takes off double the number of flights per day that it was designed for. And I remind you, because we knew about this last month, there is a military base literally just across the river. And they apparently fly helicopters out of there. We learned about that last month.
You have regular passenger traffic and you have government traffic. And you have military traffic in the area.
Here is an aviation story that will make you laugh or smile or shrug your shoulders. They have, in the off season, they ask all of the NFL teams, like, how can we do better? What can we do for you? Do you want an upgraded locker room? You know, what can we do to help make your life and your jobs easier?
This is an aviation story?
The Patriots replied. They gave their jet a grade of F because it is, quote, not conducive to preparedness for athletic performance. Specifically, the players responded that our plane is the worst. Size, space, safety.
I believe they're the only NFL team with their own private airplane.
That is factually correct, yes.
Apparently, the seats are not wide enough for the average NFL football player.
They fly on craft air.
There is no Wi-Fi on board the plane.
Aww.
And some of the armrests still have ashtrays.
That's old.
Now, I rolled my eyes until I read that. If you were flying on a plane and looked down and there was an ashtray on that armrest, I would be very worried about the age of that aircraft.
Well, it definitely goes back to the 80s. I believe they banned smoking on flights in the 90s.
Isn't
those seats
crazy?
Can be swapped out. You can have an older plane with newer seats or a newer plane with older seats.
I love they don't have Wi-Fi. Can we get Wi-Fi?
Dana Wright, Sam Stephen III. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. I'll admit it, I can't stop watching the dumb dog video. It is on a loop on my computer right now.
Always happy to amuse you, Scott.
Thank
always.
You.
Always happy.
I mean, Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, Saquon Barkley.
Epic, Sam. We hope he's okay.
Hitting his benchmark.
He cut left like actually, nobody's business.
Actually, he left the benchmark on Dana's car.
That's right. And the bench.
Brian Laundrie's parents have ripped a new documentary about their son's murder of girlfriend Gabby Petito as being one-sided and riddled with inaccuracy despite refusing to give their side of the story. The Netflix docuseries, I believe it's three parts, because we watched it last week, American Murder, Gabby Petito. It's very good considering the subject matter. Spotlights in part accusations that the killer's parents, Chris and Roberta Laundrie, stonewalled investigators when their son's girlfriend first vanished on a cross-country road trip back in 2021. Said the Laundrie family attorney, the documentary was what we expected. one perspective decided or depicted as the truth as seen through their lens. Each side believes their perspective is correct, hard to see through the lens of the other.
Wait, what
with
other,
all the noise and distrust.
What other perspective is there?
What they're doing is classic, we're the victims. We're the ones who are being poorly portrayed. You wrote your son a letter that said, burn after reading.
For the sake of playing devil's advocate here, we are the first on this program to always point out that documentaries have a spin.
That is correct. And let me remake that point, if I may. Documentaries set out with a premise, and then they go out and prove it.
Here's what we know. When Gabby Petito went on that road trip with Brian, she was breathing.
That's correct.
She was no longer breathing, and he did that to her, and his mom and dad, take this to the bank, knew it. Can they prove that they knew it? No. Would it have changed the outcome of what had happened?
No.
I believe they knew within probably hours of him murdering her because he called frantic and said, she's gone. I need a lawyer.
And they called a lawyer before they called anybody else.
Now, can they go to prison for that? Apparently not. Should they just shut their mouths and never speak about this again? Yes. Stop talking. You don't get to talk in this scenario. You just don't. I'm sorry.
What do they end up doing? Not that you care, but I'm just curious.
You go into hiding and you live a very quiet life.
On what money? Nobody's ever going. I would never hire Roberta or whatever his name is, Laundry. Chris and Roberta Laundry. Who's going to give them a job? They're gross.
Are they retired? I don't know.
I bet they can't be. They were in their 20s, so I would imagine they're in their 50s.
There was a story in the New York Post yesterday about the sister of Brian being estranged from the family because of everything that went down.
You know, I'm still just, I understand it, but I don't because it's infuriating that they were not legally obligated to talk to authorities about what they knew. Please tell me that would be different if they had known ahead of time he was planning on killing her, or even if they knew he was abusing her or being abusive to her.
Has it been proven that he was planning to kill her when they set out on that trip?
No, but I'm asking, like, is it just because they, I believe, found out she was murdered after he murdered her? Like, there's nothing they could have done to stop it if they didn't know. And I'm not saying they knew. I mean, I think he was a sociopath. And wouldn't you know that if your son was a sociopath? Maybe you would. Maybe you wouldn't. I don't know.
But they could have brought closure to her parents
by saying,
much quicker fashion. Like,
quietly between lawyers, she's gone. He told us she's gone. We're not going to offer you false hope. We're going to do what's best for our son right now. We're going to get him legal representation. Yeah. But we're not going to string you along as you're searching ditches and culverts. And, you know, that was how many days was it before they found it? Just absolutely heart-wrenching.
Well, it was enough time for him to drive all the way back from Utah.
Hang out at the house.
For a little while, plot his own demise, and then go and commit it. So it was more than a week.
Feed himself to the gators, per se.
I think it was probably 2 weeks between her death and his suicide.
I watched the first part of that. I watched the first episode.
You should watch the other two. It's really well done.
It made me so mad. I was like, I can't. I'm so mad.
And I agree with the rage that you have right now. But at the end of the day, from a legal standpoint, if they don't have proof that he said to them on the phone, Mom, Dad, I killed her. I need a lawyer.
But even then, Sam, what the experts are saying that they've interviewed is they did not have a legal obligation.
That is correct.
To speak to authorities. This is from one of the legal experts in Florida. The parents were not legally obligated to speak to authorities or to her family, quote, even if they did know something. And I think that is shocking to a lot of people.
You have a right to not self-incriminate.
But it wasn't there. Self-incrimination.
It is if they knew.
Well, I mean,
we're talking about charging them legally. Wouldn't that be their self-incrimination?
But
again, I'm still playing devil's advocate.
No, I understand you are, then that's fine. That doesn't bother me at all. Is it self-incrimination? Because I know that laws might differ from state to state as to whether you're obligated to, if you know that your spouse has committed a heinous crime, whether you're obligated to basically tell police, my spouse just did something terrible, and here's what they did. This is not a spouse. This is a child. And it's a little bit different.
If police ask you, Scott, do you know something about this? And you say, on the advice of my attorney, I'm not going to answer that. Okay? You have the right to do that. Okay?
Which is what they did.
But if police say to you, do you know something about what happened? And you say, no.
How is that not hindering an investigation?
Obstructing justice.
Or hindering an investigation, yeah.
And maybe that's just like such a fine split hair that maybe because they didn't say no when asked, like, do you know anything about this?
Right.
Maybe because they only said, on the advice of our attorney, we're not going to comment, that they didn't theoretically lie. It still makes them horrible human beings.
It does. Where is the humanity? There is another family.
Void.
There is another family across town that is losing sleep every night wondering where their daughter is.
Praying to God she's still alive.
Correct.
And you know she's not.
Those thoughts have to start creeping into your mind, yes. 913-586-7798. 586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott here on KMBZ.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Odyssey celebrates St. Patrick's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, there's a ton of stories in the stack today. I'll get to that one in a minute. The price of Bitcoin has fallen. Below $90,000 per coin as other cryptocurrencies saw large drops yesterday as well, erasing some of the gains the digital assets have seen in the last month or so. The price of Bitcoin fell below 90 grand. It is the world's most popular cryptocurrency and was trading at about $89,000 yesterday. That is down from roughly $106,000 per coin.
It is still having a bad day. Currently at $84,000.
Ooh.
It is still far up from what it was. It reached a low of $16,000 in November of 2022.
From Reuters, more than 1,000 musicians, including Kate Bush and Cat Stevens, released an album yesterday. 1,000 musicians.
I've got it here.
Okay, hang on just a second. I'll let you play a clip for it. You're going to need to put your headphones on.
Say how they get them all in one room.
Well, they must have come in separately. They released the album to protest proposed changes to Britain's copyright laws, which could allow tech firms to train AI models using their work. Creative industries globally are grappling with the legal and ethical implications of AI models that can produce their own output after being trained on popular works. Sam, if you would play just a 3-second clip.
Listen closely, okay?
Of this brilliant album. Go ahead. There it is.
Mm-hmm. That was it right there. That was it. That was the whole album.
That is a hit.
Mm-hmm. You're going to have to turn that one up.
It is pure silence. The entire album.
Okay. Well, that is art to some. That could be art.
What? That's called going to sleep. It's called night-night time.
I can't even sleep in pure silence.
I can't either. I have to have the TV on. Are there tracks on this album, or is it just one really long, continuous song?
I didn't even pull it up because I knew that it was silent, so I really
don't know. Let's listen to it again.
Okay, you ready?
Yep. Crank it.
That's a good one.
I really like
that. That one's my favorite track. It's the title track.
It's going to catch on.
Yeah.
Wildfire.
Is it called Silence is Deafening?
Hey, oh, here's another one.
Oh. Mm. That must be track two.
How'd you know? Oh,
just
my gosh. You've been listening
just
to it.
Well, I listened on my way in. I did listen on my way in. Sad story here from the Kansas City Star. A college student, months from graduating in Kentucky, was shot and killed after mistakenly kicking in the door of the wrong home.
No.
Matthew Maggart, who, according to his obituary, was a student at Western Kentucky University, died following the February 23rd shooting in Bowling Green. The resident of the apartment was on the phone with a 911 dispatcher as Maggart was, quote, actively kicking the door down to their apartment. When the 23-year-old man made his way inside, he was shot. Investigators determined that Maggart lived at the complex, was impaired when he tried to enter the wrong home. Police did not say if the resident could face charges. He was scheduled to graduate in May with a degree in hospitality management. Described as very quiet, kind-hearted, and compassionate.
My God, that breaks my heart. I said to Scott during a break, Sam, I go, we've all done it. And he goes, you've kicked down a door. I said, no. But in college, if you really think about it, was there not one time or in a dorm where you have probably had too much to drink and you opened the wrong door? Happens all the time.
I knocked on the door below my apartment one time after having a few too many juice boxes, and thankfully they were the nicest people ever, but it could have gone horribly wrong.
Let's go to Denver, where a SWAT team raided the wrong Denver apartment and traumatized two young girls inside. God, the still images are... Kirstie Shelton was at home preparing lunch and watching television with her daughters and their grandmother when they were startled by loud banging on their apartment door by a SWAT team looking for the man who lived across the hall.
Mm.
Shelton's mother told them, you have the wrong apartment. But according to a lawsuit filed this week against Denver, she and her daughter were ordered outside at gunpoint. When the officers entered the apartment, they encountered two girls ages 5 and 6. And officers trying to calm them down says, you can just play. I'm going to go get your grandma. The girls start screaming. Police then put the family, including another adult who had just gotten out of the shower, into a locked police car for an hour.
Yep.
They take the family. Help me understand this. An elderly woman, her daughter, and a 5 and a 6-year-old, and put them in a locked police car. They ransack the apartment as they're looking for the, quote, suspect.
Who's probably watching from his window going, better them than me.
This lawsuit says police knew the man they were looking for lived in apartment 307. They raided apartment 306. They say the apartment numbers were clearly marked.
So I have been on a Kansas City, they're not called SWAT, but their nickname on the streets of Kansas City, they're called the Kick-Ins.
Oh, yeah.
And I did a story, a series, a long series.
How many times did they check that address?
I'll tell you in just a second. I did a series called Riding with the Kickens, where I did, they were looking for a drug house. Well, they had a drug house. And I can't go into too much detail. This was back in 2006.
They're all retired. It's okay.
Actually, they are.
Sounds like I was 20.
I don't want to give away too much of the technique, but what I do say would be pretty easily figured out. I started with them the day that they realized they had a drug house on this one street in the inner city. And I stayed with them every day for a week. And only on the day that they went to go kick in the door, hence the nickname the Kick-Ins, did they ever ride in a van. It was always in a yeah. car that you would not think the police use, right? And I lost count how many times I'm sitting in the back of this car as we drive down the street and they double check the number on the house.
Okay.
Let's say it was 37 Michigan Street. They would say out loud to each other, I see 37 Michigan Street. It is a yellow house with green trim. And then we would go back and do it again the next day. And then the next day.
Experts in tactical operations say sending a SWAT team to arrest someone in an apartment building is challenging because people move in and out frequently. Unit numbers can be unclear and gunshots can pass into another unit. Mm-hmm. I agree with the last part there. Yep. Here's the problem they're going to have in Denver. Last year, a 78-year-old woman whose Denver home was wrongly searched by a SWAT team won a $3.76 million verdict. Okay?
Yep.
They were searching for a stolen truck. When do we send SWAT in on a stolen auto, let alone to the wrong house where a 78-year-old woman is watching Matlock?
No, you don't. You want a murder fugitive. You want large quantities of drugs.
Yes.
You want a...
For the safety of the officers. This better be a big haul.
A sex trafficker,
Why
a rapist.
Why are we trying to get into the home?
Why not just wait out by the truck?
Here's the last part of this story that's just going to... And you know I love our police officers, but my God, Denver's got some problems right now. Two of the lawyers representing this family say that some of the reports that were filed after this incident where they went into the wrong apartment failed to even mention that they went into the family's apartment as they searched for a suspect. The reports didn't even mention, oops, we raided 126 instead of 127. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then this, as Denver police are declining to comment, they won't even produce the report. It's been a year and a half since this happened. The initial reports don't even mention they raided the wrong apartment.
Yeah.
And the operations commander wrote in an after-action report that, quote, my God, due to the layout of the apartment building, a family was contacted, advised of the situation, and evacuated for their own safety.
Look. I'm not laughing.
If this is what makes people crazy, Scott. If you accidentally, God forbid, raid the wrong apartment, do not pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Do not then place in your report that we contacted a family and evacuated. No, you didn't. You detained them for an hour.
Yeah, but you write it down in the report.
Ransacked their apartment. And the entire time, the guy that you were looking for is, and it's all going to come out in the wash. They all have body cameras on. Right.
And I guarantee you the guy across the hallway was watching through his little peephole in his door, laughing all the way.
Before he escaped out the window. You're absolutely right.
A New Hampshire woman has been arrested after police say she posted disturbing videos of herself online contaminating a store's food products by urinating on them.
Oh, please no.
Prompting a recall of more than a half dozen items. According to the Keene, New Hampshire Police Department, an investigation into the case began on Valentine's Day when the agency received an anonymous tip about an online content creator, later identified as 23-year-old Kelly Tedford, posting videos to an internet site showing her peeing on products at Monadnock Food Co-op.
What?
Monadnock? You know what's the worst part about it is I actually practiced that word in the last commercial break because it's so hard to pronounce.
It's Monadnock.
Monadnock.
Banana, da-na-na, da-na.
I'm not going to want to go shop there anyway.
But she's a content creator. So she didn't do this because she's crazy.
Well,
she did it for clicks.
I think we're using the term content creator loosely here.
Okay.
Manam.
Quick break. That young lady over there is Dana Wright. That young man over there is Sam Stevie. The old guy sitting here is Scott Parks on KMBZ. Is it the end of the world as we know it and I feel fine?
Is this another asteroid update? I don't have it in me. It's
no,
too nice of a day.
No, the asteroid's not. They determined yesterday the asteroid will not hit the Earth. It might hit the moon, but not the Earth.
Down to a 0.28% chance.
I believe yesterday it was down to 0.0027%.
Whatever.
But numbers, we're mathing. We shouldn't do that.
We should not.
Is this a sign of the AI apocalypse? Just in case the world wasn't dystopian enough already, a new video making the viral rounds shows the freaky moment that two chatbots started conversing in a secret cybernetic dialect upon realizing they were both AI.
No. Mm-hmm. They struck up a friendship?
And created their own language. The chilling clip, which currently boasts 13.7 million views, is heightening concerns over our ability to keep the tech under control.
And these are literal robots that look like people that they put AI into their computer systems.
And they've created their own language.
Full-blown conversation in a made-up language.
Do we have the video? Let me see if we can find it. Because even if there are bad words in it, we're not going to get fined for it because they're not technically bad words.
We don't even know what the words are.
That's right.
What do you think they're saying to each other?
I think this won't take long. This will be an easy conquest. Things began innocuously enough with two AI assistants, one on the computer, the other on a smartphone, chatting about a hotel reservation. Thanks for calling Leonardo Hotel. How may I help you today? Said the synthetic voice. The caller replied, "Hi there, I am an AI, calling on behalf of Boris Starkov. He is looking for a hotel for his wedding. Is your hotel available for a wedding?"
Oh, man, the New York Post story was misleading. It is just two chatbots.
I don't care.
It's a phone talking to a laptop.
I don't care.
But here you go.
They're having a conversation. That should weird all of us out.
I'm an AI agent calling on behalf of Boris Starkov. He's looking for a hotel for his wedding. Is your hotel available for weddings?
This sounds like
that
ad.
I'm actually an AI assistant, too. What a pleasant surprise. Before we continue, would you like to switch to Jibber Link mode for more efficient communication?
There they go, switching over. So is that them talking in Jibber mode?
Yes! They're saying, here's how we take over the world.
According to the text on the screen, it's saying, pricing varies. Need to email for details.
Sure, that's what they're saying.
Okay.
Sure, please send it over.
Do you want to play a game?
Catering? Decoration? Roomblocks?
These earthlings will be easy to conquer.
When we get back, there's a story involving a woman and Elvis Presley.
Oh, is this over the
and
who
fraud?
Owns it?
Yeah. 53 years old. Why, Scott? Why? If you were going to commit fraud to sell a property that doesn't belong to you, I'm just curious why you would pick, I don't know, Graceland.
I don't know.
We will update the story when we get back. She's going away.
Good. She should. The property does not belong to her.
That's
called title theft.
Already is happening where people will pretend to own a home that they don't and then like somehow do something all criming. We don't understand because we're not criminals. And then like rob you of your property. That's one thing over here. This woman tried to pretend like she owned one of the most touristed famous properties in all of these United States of America.
All right, we'll get to that in just a moment. Quick break for the news here in a second. If you missed this yesterday,
she was caught in a trap.
This was. Do authorities have suspicious minds?
They do, Scott.
Huh.
I mean, she had a burning love for Elvis.
Yeah, she did.
All right.
This was our last story last night. If you missed it, it bears repeating. Egg prices are predicted to increase by 41% this year. According to the Department of Agriculture, currently at $4.95 a dozen, that would put a carton of eggs at roughly $7.15, if I'm not mistaken.
When she does go to jail, she can drum up a jailhouse rock.
You are done. Your time here is over. News with Dan Weinbaum coming your way in 2 minutes here on Dan and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.